y'all. Sorry the episode was a little late this week. We had a little bit of technical problems. And by we, I mean my computer. And I cried a lot. No sponsor ad this week, but I wanted to take this opportunity to remind you to check out the other podcasts on our network. You can do that by either going to mischiefmedia.com, just like my recorded voice tells you to do at the end of every episode, or if you go to your podcatcher of choice, that's your Apple Podcasts, Google Podcast Attic, Overcast, Stitcher, wherever, and type Mischief Media, you'll see the whole fleet of our shows up there. Is fleet the right word? I'm not sure. There's a lot of really great stuff out there that we have already, and we are getting real close to launching a couple new ones as well, especially in the coming months, and I'm really excited to share all of those with you. So yeah, either go to the main landing page or just use your fingers and type it into a search bar in a podcast-related app. I'm going to stop now. Enjoy the story. Today's story contains an abusive relationship, violence, and a post-disaster setting. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to A Story Most Queer, where every week we bring you a new story about queer characters and lifestyles, written by queer authors, narrated by queer voices. Pocket-sized queer stories for everyone. A Story Most Queer is brought to you by Mischief Media. Today's story is Dread, written and read by Catherine Gleason.
In the morning, the area of evacuation was extended another two blocks. The fire that had started with an explosion at the Con Ed steam plant on 14th Street reached an underground storage facility and flared. It burned out of control. Neither the TV nor the radio said so, but surely the widening circle of evacuation meant just that. A representative from the mayor's office urged East Village residents to stay off the streets, yet also advised them to buy bottled water, candles, and prepared food. The gas lines in the immediate vicinity had been turned off, and the electricity would be soon. Anything could happen, Kira said to the TV. She needed to go out and buy water, at the very least. The fire department activity had turned the stuff that flowed from her taps grainy and orange. Water and chocolate, this is what she needed. She'd eaten her entire stash of M&Ms the night before. She put on her shoes, but hesitated by the door. It doesn't matter how you feel, she told herself. That was what her director always said. Just say the line. Perform the action. What you feel is immaterial. Kira had recently landed a small but recurring role on a soap opera. Although she wasn't a soap opera type, she was neither conventionally pretty, nor tall, nor thin. She played an emergency medical technician, much to the amusement of her slightly avant-garde friends. You're not a doctor, Ted, her long-distance best friend, a cultural studies professor, said. And she'd say, but I play one on TV. Outside, smoke and ash hung in the air. A crowd rushed down Avenue B. Did they know something Kira did not? A fight, or was it a riot, had erupted outside the bar on the corner of the next street. Armed guards blocked the sidewalk at Avenue A and 6th Street. Kira's legs felt rubbery. Surely she would trip. Wary of the ground beneath her feet, she held the gray cement with her eyes, and the harder she looked, the more treacherous it seemed. It could split, crack open, and swallow her up. It could heave skyward with sudden force and bury her. It could melt into lava and flame. She reached 4th Street, leaned against a wall opposite Key Food, and caught her breath. A mob surrounded the store entrance, pressing to get in. Guards pushed them back, allowing only a few to pass at a time. Kira crossed the street, wormed between bodies and elbows. A guard motioned her forward, patted her down, hands lingering on her breasts. Inside, the candy aisle was empty, swept clean. The shelves of cookies, too, had been stripped. Somewhere at the back of the store, a child cried. The sound rippled Kira's nerves, and streaks of exhaustion spread from her ears down her neck into her chest and along her arms. If she stayed in the store any longer, she'd be unable to move. She turned, shuffled forward, but was stopped by the lines at the registers. The wire rack at the nearest checkout held crumpled tabloids and gum wrappers. She needed to get out of there, but she had to find something to eat. What would Janice do? And immediately, just as she'd been practicing the last 2 months, she told herself, no, don't think about her. Janice was over. She would think about something else. A large man barreled into the store, grabbed a cart, charged through the soda aisle. He reemerged, bellowing like a football player, breaking the huddle, and knocked an old lady down. He steered the cart into the crowd at the checkout. Kira jumped aside. Others he hit, and he kept going, running with his stash of crackers and laundry detergent out the electronic door and onto the street. Kira used the path he'd cut and reached the sidewalk. Punks and homeless men with few teeth surrounded her. She held up her arms, and when they saw she had no goods, they turned from her. Others clung to the fat man's cart, grabbed bottles and boxes, pushed him to the ground. One of the guards kicked him in the gut. He folded around his belly. Janice would have known how to help him. The crowd pressed closer, hitting and spitting. Janice would have stopped them. A boot stepped on his hand, but he didn't react. No, Kira thought. No. Kira stopped on the corner of her street, unclenched her chilled fingers from the handle of the plastic bag, and placed it with her groceries inside on the sidewalk. Across town, she'd found candles and bottled water, cereal and long-life milk. Then she'd added a box of kitchen matches, 2 large cans of apricot halves in heavy syrup, and, after searching, a sack of mini Hershey bars. I should have packed the stuff in 2 bags, she thought. She moved her purse to her other side, reached among the groceries, and tore open the chocolate. Down the block, in front of her building, someone stood in the weak twilight. Holding her breath, she squinted at the figure and had a sudden urge to run the other way. Janice. If she ran, Janice would see her. She probably already had. Kira took a step forward, and another, and another. You don't look so good, Janice said. She steepled her gloved fingers under her chin. I'm okay, Kira said. Her ears began to ring, and her legs wobbled. Was she okay? It'll be all right, Janice's warm hand on Kira's arm. Kira paused, then leaned away. I'm really okay, Kira said. You didn't have to come down here. Janice, a junior partner at a midtown law firm, lived in a sprawling 2-bedroom apartment on the Upper East Side. I wanted to make sure, Janice said. I called a few times, but I guess you were out. Foraging. Kira shook her grocery bag. She wanted to lie down. She probably should have headed home earlier, but store after store, she'd been determined to find chocolate. Janice shrugged. I don't know. I'm okay, really, Kira said. Thanks, though. Well, Janice said. Kira drew in a slow breath, and the taste of chemical smoke dried the back of her throat. No, Janice, it's over. She swallowed, coughed, swallowed again. The tops of her shoes had grown powdery and dull with soot. But it was sweet, really, and Janice had a point. She didn't do such a great job taking care of herself. She hadn't even bought real food. Janice's fridge was sure to be stocked, at least 3 different kinds of cheese, organic broccoli, fresh apple cider. And she'd have a loaf of pumpernickel and sweet, dark-skinned pears. Kira started to smile. Janice would cook for her, insulate her from the flames and spreading bad news. No, Kira told herself. Remember? The last time they'd eaten together, 3.5, almost 4 months earlier, the meal had ended with shattering glass, and Kira had run down the 11 flights of stairs that held Janice's apartment above the street. I better go, Kira said. She stretched her arm as if indicating a long distance. Janice nodded. I'm glad you're okay. Yeah, I mean, thanks. Kira said. She lifted the bag, stepped toward the door. Promise me you'll stay home? Janice remained in the same spot. It's safer indoors. So they say, Kira nodded, resisted asking why it had been okay for Janice, who didn't even live in the neighborhood, to be out on the East Village streets. Oh, I'm staying in, she said. She wanted to tell Janice about the man who'd been attacked at Key Food, but she couldn't let herself start, so she turned away. "I'm staying in," she repeated, waved, scrambled through the front door and up the stairs. She put away her purchases, opened a can of apricots, and sat on the floor in front of the TV, slurping the thick syrup. "No, Janice," she thought. "There's nothing to worry about," the mayor said, his face white and drawn. "Ha," Kira said to the TV. The winds had shifted, causing the flames at the plant to stutter and leap. The fire department added another 2 blocks to the area of evacuation. Sirens waited the night air. Wrapped in her down comforter, Kira finished the chocolate. Around midnight, she curled up in the bathtub. A bathtub, she reasoned, wouldn't burn, and pretended to sleep. Fake sleep was better, after all, than no sleep. Around 5 a.m., something jolted Kira back to alertness. Sirens. But had there been a crash? An explosion? The sirens grew more distant. She hoisted her stiff spine into a sitting position, and, trying not to touch the icy sides of the tub, crawled out onto the bathroom floor. It was abnormally cold. Her body wouldn't unbend. The steam pipe that usually kept the bathroom tropical felt chilly, dead. She ran the hot water, brown, also cold, and pulled herself up to stand. She sidled into the kitchen and tried the stove, but found no gas. She needed a hot bath, or a shower at least, to loosen her muscles, unfurl her spine. She'd go out, swing by the gym, and shower, then hop the subway, head out to the studio in Brooklyn. She'd probably be there by 6:30, the time she usually arrived for a shoot. But she wasn't scheduled to be on the set that week, and didn't have to be in the studio until later in November. It wouldn't hurt if she showed up, though. Her presence would convey her commitment and team spirit, and they might even find something for her to do. She flicked on the TV. She still had electricity, but there seemed to be no local news. She dialed Ted, the confidant she never saw, at his office in Western Massachusetts. During the semester, he often wrote there in the early morning, but she got one of those fast, busy signals that indicated some kind of problem. She dressed quickly, adding an extra sweater, fished a pair of gloves from under the hall table, and set off for the gym. The Gothic building across the street stood gray, without power. The streetlights were out, and a cop lounged on the corner by the dark traffic signal. She tried Ted again, this time on her cell phone, but no one picked up. A group of emergency vehicles clustered on Avenue A, 2 blocks north of Key Food, and the smoke around them seemed thicker. She stepped into the street to cross, but stopped in the middle. A flicker. Was it a flame? From manhole cover. A glow, a flash, and the fire reached up from the ground, stroked the underside of the nearest ambulance. Kira ran forward toward the impending disaster. "I have to save them," she thought. In the next moment, she told herself she was being ridiculous. She was not really an EMT, and she hadn't any real skills, but she continued to run. Onlookers pressed together, lining the sidewalk. She squirmed between them. Fire caught hold of the vehicle, sending a spire of flame skyward. "People are in there," Kira thought. She began to shake. She'd spent time on an EMS truck while researching her role. Maybe she wasn't actually one of them, but she knew them. She pulled her phone from her pocket and put it back. What could she actually do? Emergency workers circled the burning truck, blocking her view, and the other vehicles pulled away. Had those inside gotten out? Whoever had been in the truck had escaped or was burning. Either way, it was in the hands of professionals. A young TV reporter and cameraman swept the crowd, capturing reactions of people on the street. The camera on her, Kira backed away. The cameraman waved to her. Was he someone she knew? She wiggled farther into the crowd, forcing her breath in and out. Panic gathered in her chest, needles of ice shooting along her limbs. She was surrounded by strangers, raspy voices, and sharp smells. She pulled out of the crowd and ran, each footfall reverberating in the sore muscles of her neck. First Avenue, Second. As she approached the Bowery, her cell phone rang, and, slowing, she imagined Ted in his office, feet on the desk. She answered, "Janice." "Are you crazy? What are you doing out? I turn on the TV, and there you are, with a burning truck. You said you were staying in." Janice's words formed a bubble, snug and cold, around her head. Kira explained her plan, repeated the steps to herself. Gym, shower, work. "No one is going to work," Janice said.
"You don't know these people," Kira said. "The show must go on."
She reached Lafayette, searched the lifeless windows of the gym, jogged across the empty street with the hope that she had missed the movement within. Closed. "No gym, no shower." "You're out already. Why don't you come up here?" Janice said.
"No, really," Kira said. She'd bathe at the studio.
"So, subway, work, then shower." She turned up Lafayette.
"I'm sort of lonely here, stuck at home," Janice said. "They might need me," Kira said.
"Subway, work, shower. I could really use the company." Janice's voice, soft, almost shy and pleading.
"I'm at the station," Kira said. "I should get off."
She paused at the top of the stairs.
"I know I shouldn't say this, but I miss you." She sounds sad, Kira thought.
She forced her knees to bend, her legs to carry her down, one step and then another, and she began to cough. Smoke, a cloud of it, rising. People, a knot of them, coming toward her, bounding, pushing.
"Oh no," she said.
They carried her back to the street, an electrical stench rising with them. "What? Kira, are you okay?"
"No," she said. "Yes, I'm... The subway's on fire?"
Gasping, leaning against a wall, wanting to run. "Walk back to Third," Janice said. "Are you listening? Go up Third."
"Third,"
Kira repeated. She crossed the street, moving away from the subway's maw. Janice's voice cushioned her, the smells and sights of the street dimmed as if she were underwater or asleep.
No subway, she thought. No work.
"Just walk up Third and I'll meet you by Bloomingdale's."
Kira sniffed, wiping her face on her coat sleeve.
"You're going to be fine," Janice said. "I'll see you in a little while, sweetie. Okay?"
Kira kept placing her feet on the pavement, jarring her whole body. The buildings around her moved by at surprising speed.
Inside, her coat and extra sweater, her skin glowed, sticky and hot. She'd shower at Janice's. Shower, then home.
Shower, maybe eat something, then home.
And she'd get Ted on the phone. She wouldn't tell him she'd been to Janice's. It would be a brief visit.
"Okay," Kira said. "See you in a bit."
Janice sprawled in the green velvet armchair, and Kira, at the table, bent over her meal, French toast and poached pears, a glass of freshly squeezed orange juice, a demi-tasse of espresso. She pushed wet hair away from her face and pressed a forkful of pear to the roof of her mouth. The silky fruit dissolved, a sweet cloud of memory-erasing bliss. Kira moved her head from side to side, trying to catch all the nuances of the pear's flavor. Warmed away by the abundant hot water of Janice's bathroom, the pain in her neck had vanished. She scooped up another bite of pear.
"This is amazing," she said, pointing fork toward plate. "Is it cardamom?"
"Yeah," Janice said, "and ginger and cinnamon."
"Wow," Kira put her fork down. "You've done a great job. The whole apartment's gorgeous. Jimmy and Mitch say you've done wonders with their old place, too, Janice said. Kira coughed. You know Jimmy and Mitch? She'd never imagined Janice knew the guy she sublet from. Sure, Janice shrugged. Mitch was also a lawyer, but New York brimmed with lawyers. How did you ever get a role on a soap? Janice settled back into her chair. When they'd been together, Kira had shuffled from audition to audition with no luck, no callbacks, no nothing. I made a couple of student films, Kira said, so I'd have a reel. How did Janice know about the job? Student films. Janice's voice sounded hard, arch, almost sarcastic. But maybe it wasn't? I put flyers all over Columbia and NYU. I'll be the mommy. 30-something actress available now. Kira blushed. Of course, I got a lot of creeps calling, too. And I thought you only played house with me, Janice said, grinning from her enormous chair. She's lonely here without me, Kira thought. She speared the last bite of pear and French toast. Janice certainly could cook, and her apartment did look great, clean, organized. But it wasn't just aesthetic appeal. The place was a real home. It had always felt that way, from the first night Kira had spent there, 2 years earlier, till that final dinner. Of course, they'd already officially broken up by then, but that wasn't the first time Janice had thrown things. Kira placed her knife and fork across her plate. Shower, eat, then home, she told herself. Now, home. This was so sweet of you, Kira said. I'm feeling much better, and I should go. What? Janice sat up straight, her eyes narrowed. Oh God, Kira thought, I've made her mad. Don't be mad. You're really going back down there. It can't be safe. Janice lifted Kira's plate from the table, and Kira held her breath, willed herself to stillness. Janice paused, shook her head, sauntered into the kitchen. She's worried, that's all. The air leaked from Kira's lungs. Thank you so much, she said. I really appreciate it. Kira gathered her things, slipped into her coat, headed out the door, called the elevator. She sucked in a breath, preparing for argument, for flight. The muscle along the side of her neck awoke and throbbed. Janice stood inside the apartment door. The elevator arrived, and she waved. Good luck, she said. Call if you need me. On the street, Kira broke into a run. She'd catch a cab, have it take her as far downtown as it could. Home, she thought. A bus swooped alongside her, pulling up at a stop just as she arrived. She climbed aboard. She knew it was the wrong bus, that it was going across town, not downtown, but she boarded anyway, took a seat by the window. It would be warm, she reasoned, and the ride through the park could be pleasant. She settled into her seat, and the skin of her face began to feel looser. She unbuttoned the top buttons of her coat and leaned against the window. Outside, skeleton trees beckoned, joggers jogged, dogs sniffed and peed. A day spooling itself out just like any other day. This far north, there was no smoke, no sign of fire, quiet ordinariness. You'd never know anything bad could happen. The bus emerged from the park, and Kira got off, walked a few blocks along the bus route. A crowd in front of an electronics store drew her, their faces flickering in the light thrown by a bank of 9 TVs. The sets were all tuned to the same news program. A riot had broken out in Tompkins Square, not 2 blocks from Kira's apartment. Police had arrived to investigate an altercation at the bar on 7th and B. Someone in the crowd threw a bottle. A homeless person screamed, and the assembled locals roiled, jumping fences, tearing up plants, hurling trash cans. A tree on the park's north side caught fire. Kira pointed at the TV screen. I live down there, she said, and, still pointing, covered her mouth with her other hand. Shouts erupted from the sets. An explosion. The Cristadora, a fancy apartment building on the east side of the park, crashed in on itself. "The area is cordoned off," said the young reporter, the same woman she'd seen at the ambulance fire. No home, Kira thought. She tried Ted on her cell phone again. No answer. Crossed the street, hopped the bus going back to the east side, back toward Janice. Early in the morning, Kira woke, curled into a corner of Janice's bed, a throw blanket over her head. Janice stretched across the other side, asleep. Kira tried to put aside her resentment and disgust, but she was left with such heaviness. Her body had betrayed her. She hadn't wanted to be with Janice, but her body had responded despite her mind's protest. Her limbs, still weighted with Janice's attention, moved with difficulty. Kira eased herself up to sit. In sleep, Janice's face, soft and lambent, appeared almost sweet. Kira had the sense that she was engaged in a game she didn't understand. If only she knew the rules. But where Janice was concerned, she always seemed to be teetering toward violation. Kira crept to the bathroom, her nerves dancing. In the afternoon, Janice went out to buy the ingredients for dinner. On Janice's landline, Kira dialed Ted's number and reached a phone company recording. "Please enter your long-distance code now." Janice no longer had out-of-state service? Had she blocked it? Kira hung up, and her need to speak to Ted swelled. She had to ask about Mitch and Jimmy. How long had they known Janice? But mostly she wanted distraction. Ted would entertain her with one of his verbal games. The last few times they'd spoken, he'd been on to a new one. He called it dread. It was simple, really, but Kira found it difficult. The idea was for the players to name the thing they dreaded most. The dread of IRS audits. Unemployment. Bad haircuts. Even simple heartbreak. They all had their amusement value. But the material of Kira's misshapen existence seemed ill-suited. Or maybe she was just cowardly. "I dread that he will make me play dread," she thought. She fished her cell phone from her bag. It stared, blank, the battery dead. She kicked the wall, hard, howled from the pain, slumped to the floor. She lay gasping, flailing, in a pool of reproach. How had she forgotten the charger? Why did she always do things like this? She let out another howl, which thinned to a moan, sobbing, choking, hiccuping. She struggled to sit, pulled her knees to her chest. With the sleeve of her shirt, she dried her face, patting the delicate skin around the eye. She reminded herself that she hadn't planned to visit Janice, had had no intention of spending the night. She'd go out, find a quick phone charge place. At the door to the apartment, she realized she didn't have keys. If she left, she couldn't get back in. She had the keys to her own apartment, though. Her own bed. The view from her front window. Were they still there? She turned on the TV. Nothing, just a gentle snow. Her whole neighborhood could be burning. Eyes leaking, she gathered the woolen throw around her, sank onto the couch in front of the blank, fuzzy screen, and finished a pound bag of M&Ms. Janice came home late and was annoyed to find Kira asleep on the couch. She hadn't even washed the breakfast dishes. Kira tried to muster a clear head, but her brain still seemed buffeted by the TV's gray snow. "The TV's not working," Kira said. "I'd forgotten that you care so much about the old boob tube," Janice said. Over a gin and tonic, Janice explained that she'd had the cable disconnected and had started resetting the channels but had never finished the job. "She saw me on TV," Kira thought. "This TV." Kira was about to comment. Instead, she stood. "Leave," she thought. "I talked to Mitch," Janice said. "What?" Kira said. She dropped back into the couch's lush velvet. Now calm down. I just talked to him. Janice placed a drink in front of Kira on the coffee table. You called Mitch? A large piece of lime floated deliciously in the glass before her. She could still go. I don't want this, she said, pushing the drink away. Temper, temper. Janice took a long swallow from her own glass. You really do have to learn to control yourself. Kira hadn't raised her voice or whined, had she? Janice hated whining, and Kira did too. She'd have to watch herself more closely. Mitch says he totally understands if you want to move out. Janice seemed genuinely concerned. Kira said again. In flashes, she saw her bedroom, the morning light, the park bench where she drank coffee, and then an angry mob. Smoke. Flames shooting from a manhole. She could taste the smoke. Anything could happen. Her legs felt heavy, rooted. The bubbles in the glass in front of her, silvery, inviting, drifted through the water of latent forgetfulness, perfuming the air. She bent her head to the glass, raised it with both hands. Kira found herself in Janice's bed. The moves that led her there blurred into one sinking motion. She lifted Janice's arm from around her waist. She couldn't sit up, whether from the alcohol or the exhaustion that had been dogging her. In the past, when she tried to discuss Janice's sexual aggression, her feeling of being stalked, the sense that she had no choice in the matter, Janice had said, "You're just unapproachable." And Kira had figured this was true. Hardly anyone had approached her before Janice, and even fewer since. Kira slithered toward the nightstand and the glass of water that stood on top. Janice rolled onto her back and watched Kira drink. "Headache?" Janice asked. Kira nodded, and Janice banged open the nightstand drawer, flicked out a bottle of aspirin, and jiggled two pills free. Kira lifted one, swallowed, and then the next. Some things never changed. This was their old routine. It went with their playing house, a ritual they'd developed the year they lived together. Putting away groceries, Kira'd say, "I'll be the mommy." "I'll be the mommy too," Janice added, and they both laughed, and Janice tickled her until they were a tangle of naked limbs on the kitchen floor. Janice's next line, the post-coital one, was, "Who's the only one who loves you?" The correct answer, Janice. Just Janice. Janice went to her office and returned home with a 1-pound bag of M&Ms. She also carried a bottle of gin and Kira's overnight bag, overflowing with clothes and mail. "I just popped by for your things," Janice said, dangling Kira's keys at eye level. Her keys? The one to the front door of Kira's building, the two to the locks on her apartment door, her mailbox key, and the key to the kitchen door of Ted's house hung from Janice's key ring. Kira began to shake, a quaking rising hot from her center. Was Janice teasing her? Kira wanted to grab her keys, push Janice aside, stalk out the door. "Aren't you going to thank me?" Janice's voice, a sobering slap. Kira held her breath. "Don't react," she told herself. Tears bubbled up. Kira bit the inside of her cheek, reached for her bag, pressed a t-shirt to her face, squeezing her eyes and fists closed. A tinge of smoke and something harsh, metallic. She imagined her stuff, copies of plays, recordings of performances, her own bed. And she saw it all licked with red, smoldering, charred. She didn't dare ask about the neighborhood. She didn't dare say anything. Janice stirred gin, speared olives, poured. She placed two martinis on the coffee table and related a long story about the incompetence of the support staff at her office. Earlier in the day, Kira had reached her director on the phone. He said the late fall storyline was being reconsidered because of the fires. In other words, they might not need Kira at all. Kira hadn't planned to tell Janice. She wasn't sure she could do so with the right degree of detachment. But as the gin went down, her news slipped out. "Don't worry," Janice said. "I'll take care of you." "This is serious." Kira's voice broke the words into jumpy syllables. Janice shook her head. "You know, it isn't all about you. There's a serious situation downtown. Fires are burning. Lives have been lost." Of course, Janice was right. Kira's job was, in many ways, the best part of her life. But job or no job, she was, after all, alive, healthy, surrounded by beautiful things. Kira woke with a start, swung her legs over the side of the couch, stumbled to the ringing phone. "Hey, it's me," Ted's voice over the wires. "How did you know I was here?" Kira cradled the receiver in both hands. "Mitch called me," the whoosh of exhaled smoke. "Said he'd talk to Janice." Kira started to cry. "What's going on? Are you okay?"
"Nothing, nothing. I'm just happy to hear you."
She squeezed the receiver between shoulder and ear and returned to the couch. "Should I come down?"
"No, really," she said. "I'm okay."
"The TV reports have been so sensationalistic."
"Yeah," she said. She wiped her nose on her wrists, sniffed.
Ted would come if she asked. He'd take her away. She could stay with him and Bruce. The line popped with static. Kira sniffed again. Maybe the news reports were exaggerated. Maybe her apartment was fine. "Dread," Ted said. Kira bit the inside of her lower lip. She imagined Janice dangling her keys like bait. "Come on," Ted said. "You must have something."
"It's silly, really," Kira tried for a bantering tone.
"Out with it." Another breath of exhaled smoke.
She said, struggling out of her sweater.
What if she had snatched her keys back?
"I don't know," she said.
"I love you," he said.
"I miss you," she said, and imagined her director side coaching, guiding Kira to her own true expression.
"I miss you too. You're really okay?"
"We've been eating really well."
Kira pressed her teeth into the pad of her thumb. The line cracked and hissed.
"Dread?" Ted repeated.
"I have to go," she said, and hung up. Her heart thumped, beating too fast. "Janice," she said in a stage whisper. "Just Janice." Dressed in her coat, cell phone, wallet, underwear, moisturizer, and an extra shirt filling out her pockets, Kira stationed herself by the apartment door and waited, listening for her cue. She imagined Janice triumphant, jangling Kira's keys above her head. She stepped into the image, the determination, Janice's power. In the hallway, the elevator door clanked open. Footsteps, but they faded away. Not yet. Again, the rattle and bang of the elevator. This time the feet approached. A key poked into the lock. Janice. The doorknob turned. "It doesn't matter how you feel," her director's words in her head. "Perform the action." Kira took a deep breath. Janice swung the door open. "Perform. Action." Kira sprang, seizing Janice's wrist. Anything could happen. Janice staggered, her lips parted, but her face remained blank. No sound came out. Kira snatched the keys from Janice's hand, tucked them into her pocket, zipped them inside. "Now run. Run."
Run. Thank you for listening to A Story Most Queer. Today's episode was Dread, written and read by Catherine Gleason. This episode was edited by Leah Cornish. Our outro music is Round Daytime by Paratune. If you like the show, please remember to rate, review, and subscribe on your podcast app of choice. It really helps others find us. You can follow us on social. We are A Story Most Queer on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. If you would like to submit a story, head over to astorymostqueer.mischiefmedia.com to read over our FAQs and fill out the form. You can also check out mischiefmedia.com for the other shows on our network. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next week for another Story Most Queer.